you lost a survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh baby, this is why Blank lost.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Why Blank Lost. I'm David Bloomberg, and I spent a lot of time I'll never get back watching web videos about people enjoying steak. Joining me as always is my co-host, who actually knows why people on Survivor spend so much time talking about the food rewards they win, Jessica Lewis.
Yes, I actually do. Hello, everyone. And let me tell you, the steak that I had out on the island was probably the best food I've ever eaten. So I totally get it, even though I understand your pain because I don't want to listen to them talk about food either. Yeah, but living in the moment at that time, it's amazing. It really is.
All right. Well, normally as we begin, we would talk about how badly we sucked at our predictions for the week. But this time instead, I want to start by saying that I feel vindicated because last week I said that it was quite possible Angela didn't have a choice and wasn't the real decision maker. And, you know, that rather Michael was, and she had to go along because he'd already flipped. This week, Bradley talked in interviews about how Michael had gotten very close with himself and Kellen and become a trusted ally. So since I haven't gotten any predictions right, I'm going to take credit for at least getting an interpretation right.
I love that.
So, you know, now that I've patted myself on the back for that, I
as
also
you should.
I also feel like I was so close in my actual prediction this week.
You were. I thought for sure I'm like, Libby is going. And I was, I was excited for you. And then it didn't happen.
Right. I mean, I did not foresee Bradley being voted off at all until the end of Tribal Council, when I noticed the way it was being edited and presented to us.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm at least going to take credit for correctly predicting which tribe was going to lose immunity, even if they did lose because another tribe threw it, which we'll get to. And of course, we both deserve credit for predicting the return of the effing stick.
I know, right? We were so on that. Although we were more along the lines of someone should be creative and actually make the effing stick, but it's even better that we have the real thing and it has evolved.
It's very exciting. Like a Pokemon.
Very exciting.
It would have been really funny if James had tried to bluff with a fake effing stick and then the real effing stick shows up and everybody's like, you know, James already tried
that. You know what? Here, that's a genius idea. Oh my word, because he actually has the effing stick. He should make another one. And then trick somebody with it. Ooh, I like that.
He could be like Dominic and have a real idol, but show them the fake idol for reasons that make no sense.
No, but like, okay, or give it to someone and be like, I'm going to give you the idol. And then it's not the real effing stick. It's the fake one that he made and he keeps the real one.
That would be
incredible. That would be amazing. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm totally getting thrown off on the effing stick, but it's one of the only idols that you really could fake because it is just a stick.
Yeah, the other one, the problem would be that these guys don't know about it, but from last season, you know, Lauren's piece of string and the shell that was thrown into the fire by Dr. Mike. That would be a perfect one too, but none of them know about it.
Right. Yes. So I do think that that would be fascinating. Oh, I like that. I like that concept. I hope it happens.
So anyway, talking about the throwing of the challenge, I know that Jessica Johnston, not you, the other Jessica, the one that we saw, you know, in New York, we saw her get voted out.
Yes, we did.
She was on the recap show with Rob, and she did not believe that Dominic threw the challenge. But I'm sorry to that, Jessica. You're behind the curve on that one because you know, maybe it's that she didn't have a chance to see any of the Survivor media or anything yet, but Bradley discussed in interviews how Dominic later said that he did And also Reddit let us know that Dominic apparently mentioned it at his watch party, mm-hmm. saying that, you know, he swam slowly. He threw rings on the ground. We all saw that terrible dive, et cetera. Yeah.
And did you notice his hashtags, too, on Twitter when he was he was making fun of his dive? And one of the hashtags was something like, I don't know what happened here. And then another one was, or maybe do I, or something like that. He was implying very heavily that he knew exactly what he was doing.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, also according to that Reddit post, he said he spoke to a cameraman about it, but suspects it wasn't shown because it would have ruined the suspense, which, you know, I can see. I'm pretty sure that's happened before. Also, it said that both Chelsea and Donathan knew about the throw ahead of time. And this adds to the reason I believe it did happen that way, because nobody has come out to contradict it, despite some of them contradicting other things that Bradley has said in his interviews.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I do believe Dominic threw the challenge. And on top of that, Bradley also noted in his RHAP interview that Dominic had told others previously that Bradley and Kellen had to go. And so it would have been totally in character for him to do it. It's not like this came out of nowhere.
Right. I'm just sad that they didn't let us know that that's what was happening. I realized that they wanted to probably shock everyone that it wasn't Libby and that it turned out to be Bradley. But I think as far as Dominic's gameplay is concerned, it would have been fascinating if we had been able to see that discussion and that idea come up and that Donathan knew about it and that they were on board, that his tribe was basically on board with throwing the challenge. I feel like that would have been a really interesting thing to watch, although I understand they wanted to keep us guessing.
Yeah, apparently this is not the first time this season. I know that a couple other players have said, they didn't show my best strategic play of the game.
Right.
You know, and here again, if I were Dominic and I plotted this whole thing out and I was just gangbusters here and then they didn't show it, I'd be like, really, guys?
Yeah.
Come on.
Oh, and I've been subject to that, too, where they left an entire relationship out of my season. You know, Adam and I were insanely close. They never showed it.
You guys didn't really know each other.
No, not at all. But it is very interesting what they decide to show and not show. And this is one of those things that I feel like it would have made for a better story as far as how they got to where they were getting. Because I think everybody kind of walked away from the episode going, what the hell just happened? Like, I'm trying to figure it out. But for whatever reason, that was the way that they wanted to tell the story.
Yeah, because, you know, sometimes they do episodes where they don't bother to try to trick you. It's, you know, the downfall of the cocky guy.
Right.
Is a classic, classic type of episode that they do. And this would have been perfect for that. You know, they've already shown the whole time that Bradley was the villain. So let us all enjoy his downfall.
Yeah.
As he has no idea it's coming and his tribe is plotting against him, you know, to take him out.
That would have been
a fun episode.
It really would have been. And I think that it would have given more of an opportunity for the viewers to not only understand it, but like you said, enjoy it as it's happening instead of all of a sudden it's at the end and Bradley went home and then you're kind of reveling in it as opposed to during the episode watching it all unfold.
Right. So the reason that I bring this all up at this point is that, you know, this really doesn't fall into any particular rule that we're going to discuss, but if you look at it this way, this is how we have to view everything when we're going through the rules. And, you know, that's really the only way we can address the reasons for his loss is to look at it this way.
Crazy.
Yeah. But before we get to that point, I have a couple more preliminary items. First, I wanted to give credit to the tabulator, Kirk Clark, who tweeted during the show, earlier in the episode, there was B-roll footage of a dead crab. Foreshadowing for Bradley?
I missed that.
Yeah. And I responded to him at the time that I would laugh my ass off if that happened. Of course, it did. So that makes me assless, which is appropriate because the Navidi tribe is also assless after that vote.
Are you trying to come up with another phrase for a t-shirt? I think
No. I'm not Johnny Fairplay.
Oh, that's true. That is true.
I am not. Yes, that's 100% true. I am not old Johnny Fairplay. I am not new Johnny Fairplay. I am in no way, nor have I ever been Johnny Fairplay.
Cleared that up.
Yes. In case there was any confusion. With the preliminaries out of the way, a quick reminder that we will be going through my Survivor rules to see what Bradley did right and wrong. You can find those rules at robhasawebsite.com/survivor rules. The show certainly told the story that Bradley was voted out pretty much solely for his attitude and behavior. But anyone listening right now knows that it's almost never that simple. And it's definitely not that straightforward this time.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, my own thoughts on the matter have changed rather dramatically from watching the episode to right now, based on information we have gotten from various sources. So let's figure out why Bradley lost. We begin with the first rule, which of course says to scheme and plot. I think Bradley was doing pretty well with this rule, though I don't know that I would rate him quite as high as he rated himself when he said an episode ago, I feel like I'm playing an A-plus game.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. At the time, I said on Twitter that he was either getting voted out that night or he was going to win. I was off by one episode.
I did say that was foreshadowing when he said he was playing an A-plus game.
Yeah. But even so, Jeff Probst told Entertainment Weekly this week that Bradley is very bright. He's clearly got a head for the strategy of Survivor. And I would agree. Very quickly on day two, he was part of an alliance of himself, Wendell, Dominic, Morgan, Kellen. He later added Sebastian as someone he knew would never flip on him. And then the first swap came. And I think this is where Bradley really showed his strategic abilities. Per Brendan's interviews and what we saw on TV, Bradley and Kellen were basically in charge of their alliance, keeping an eye on the opposing tribe mates. Stephanie, in an interview, said Bradley and Kellen were a power couple and had the other three as minions following along with them.
Mm.
Bradley instituted the Boston Rob buddy system to make sure the Malolos were never alone without being followed by an original Navidi. Now, with that said, I'm not sure where the buddy was when Michael found his first idol. But, Brendan told Mike Bloom that Bradley had the leadership role to that point, and he determined when they interacted, who they interacted with, etc. Now, I mentioned that Stephanie called out the other three Navidi as just being minions. It seems like Bradley and Kellen handled their allies well at this point, according to what Bradley said in interviews, that they would decide who was going and then, plant these seeds with Desiree and Chelsea until one of them would throw out a name. Then Bradley and Kellen would jump on board. So, that's what I saw. How about you?
You basically said everything I wanted to say. Just a few things that I think were interesting. In his pregame, he talked about wanting to have personal conversations with every single person, and then he wanted to talk to everybody every single day. And I feel like we didn't see that as much that at the beginning, but I feel like there was an evolution of Bradley as the game moved along.
Was he on Ghost Island evolving over time? A different Pokemon.
That's true. Honestly, I think island life was working for him. He looked pretty good by the time things were done. But regardless, I'm just saying he evolved out there. I think, someone called him Clark Kent. I think he could kind of fill that role a little bit. But I think that his game was interesting because it was kind of a slow roll, if you will. I think he was forming those relationships early, and he did what he wanted to do, which was trying to lead from a standpoint that it didn't look like he was acting like he was leading. And that's what he and Kellen were able to do. He was able to really take hold of a group of people and kind of move them in a direction that he and Kellen wanted without them necessarily feeling like that's where they were going, making them also feel like they were more of the ones leading as opposed to he or Kellen. And I think that he did a phenomenal job with Kellen doing that. But I almost think he got cocky. And that's why it kind of evolved into this, as he referred to himself, being a little bit of a dick, where it negatively affected what he had been moving towards. And that was having a good relationship with everybody. He did talk about that was part of his strategy, that when they were on Malolo and the complaining about the sand and it was all dirt and it was cold, that that was all part of his strategy to try to make Malolos feel like there's a reason why you're losing. It's not because you're all terrible. It's because of where you live. And so that he claimed was part of his strategy too, but it seemed to backfire, even though we know that that's not exactly why he went home, but yeah. He was clearly rubbing people the wrong way. And that's, you're working against yourself if that's what you're presenting to people.
Yeah. So it's interesting that you bring up how Bradley and Kellen were controlling everything, but trying to make it seem as if they weren't. And I think you're right. That was their attempt. The question that I have is how successful it was, because at first it seemed like it was, but the more I thought about it, I'm not so sure. So I'd like to move into the second rule, which discusses how players need to avoid scheming and plotting too much and backstabbing too soon, because I think there were some issues there.
Oh, and I agree with you entirely. I mean, he even said that he played too hard, too fast, too soon. But it was a great idea of how they were going about utilizing this strategy and this plan. And I feel like a lot of viewers, at least, were thinking Kellen was kind of in control and she was kind of running the show. We didn't necessarily think Bradley was. But then if you look back at the episode where after Brendan went home, everyone was going to, you know, at least you saw Stephanie and Mike, they both went to Bradley to kind of beg for mercy, if you will, so that they could stay. And I feel like that was a good indicator of who was really calling the shots. But that's where I think he ended up becoming, it got to his head a little bit, you know, that suddenly he was running the show. And in a lot of his confessionals, you heard him talk about how we get to choose who goes home and this is completely our choice and what's best for my game, which, of course, that's what you have to do. You have to determine what's best for your game. But it really did, I think, change for him where he didn't recognize that the strategy was working very well in a quiet fashion. He kind of blew it up and made everybody see it more than he needed to.
Yeah, and that's, you're right, because that's what I'm getting to. So in the second rule, you know, obviously he never backstabbed too soon since he was Navidi strong all the way.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like you said, he came out too hard, too strong. But there are some other issues here that he had, which was, you know, one key part of the rule says players should not be open or obvious with their scheming. Another notes that for any alliances that are out in the open, do not let it be known that you are the decision maker, even to those within your alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, there's the part that says players need to avoid becoming an obvious duo. And he had problems with all of these, even as he was trying to avoid problems with all of these.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, both Brendan and Stephanie said in interviews that Bradley and Kellen were clearly in charge.
Right.
Okay. Dominic was telling people prior that he needed to get rid of one or both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if all these people knew it, then clearly Bradley and Kellen weren't really fooling everyone.
And that's true. And that brings me back to why they should have voted out Kellen. James should have targeted Kellen, but that's a different story.
Yes. Yes. That was last week.
I know, but it's but yeah, that all it definitely makes sense because we have heard so many people mention it. And also even during tribal council, Stephanie Johnson like called them out and said that they were the two that was in charge. And she called Bradley out as being very controlling and in regards to the buddy system that no one could, I can't remember exactly how she said it, but it was it wasn't very flattering the way she described how everyone was being, all the Malolos were being watched very closely and that Bradley had instituted that. So that he did get called out on it a lot, as did Kellen. And I don't know if I think their plan was a good one. And if they had gone about it differently, obviously, I think there would have been a different result.
Yeah. Now, just as a side note to your mention of last week, remember, we already discussed how Michael was already in good with Kellen. So there was no way James was flipping Michael.
I know. You got to remind me that you were right about that.
That's right. That's right. Don't make me use the sound drop again.
I do love it, though.
Anyway, I think that maybe Desiree was fooled into thinking that she had more of a voice than she did. But if so, then she would seemingly be the only one, based on what we're hearing and seeing, because clearly Chelsea and Dominic knew who the decision makers were.
Yeah.
You know, and speaking of Chelsea, I did want to reference her web confessional this week, in which she mentioned that Bradley had thrown her name around in original Navidi early on. Now, for his part, Bradley said in interviews that she had been throwing his name around back then.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they both were. But if it's true that Bradley was doing it before it was necessary, well, that's another part of this rule that came back to haunt him.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems like everyone was kind of looking at Chelsea and Bradley as they've been Navidi strong together, because they were together for like the entire game. I think he and she played almost the entire game, if not the whole thing together.
The whole thing. Yeah.
So that's one of those relationships that should have developed differently. And unfortunately, because early on they were both targeting each other, clearly it was who's going to take who out first. And Chelsea won that battle. So.
Yep. Yep. All right, moving on to the third rule. It tells players that they need to be flexible. You know, watching the show itself, it wasn't really clear whether or not Bradley was following this rule. It seemed like he, Kellen, and the Navidi crew were in lockstep and he wasn't interested in anything else. But in his interviews, he said that he tried and tried to get the Malolo players to break, but none would.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, Michael came over to the dark side, which, you know, I think would have been a benefit to Bradley and may still be to Kellen going forward. Also, from his interviews, Bradley seemed to have a good idea of who he wanted at the end with him, but he knew there were a variety of potential combinations, so he wasn't totally locked in.
Mm-hmm.
However, when he got to this newest swap tribe, it didn't seem to me like he was at all interested in working with or even pretending to work with Donovan and Libby. He just gravitated to his original Navidi and expected, or at least hoped, it would hold. It had been working for him so far, but he needed to keep those options open to him.
Well, and I really wonder how much of this is actually true, because the whole concept or this idea of, you know, Navidi strong that everyone is espousing, and then to have Bradley say that, well, you know, the Malolos didn't want to work with anybody and they just wanted to work with each other. Well, doesn't that kind of make sense if that's what the Navidi people are saying, that we're not flipping on purple and basically screw you guys, like we're staying together. So you need to work with us. We're not going to work with you kind of mentality. So I can understand if the Malolos were a little concerned about having to turn their backs on each other because they were up against a group of five that were clearly going to stick together. So I don't know if the Malolos completely shunned them, but maybe they kind of felt like they had to. It just seems like a strange dynamic to be calling them out on. They didn't want to talk to us and they were crying on the beach. And I went and I tried to like make nice and talk to them. And I get it. I understand after Brendan was gone that all of a sudden they were like, all right, I'm ready to flip. Let's do this. I'll work with you. And Michael ended up being the one that was chosen. But I just wonder how much effort was actually put into welcoming the Malolos in instead of making them feel like somebody better pick because you don't have a choice.
Yeah, it's hard to say because, I mean, clearly he did make good relationships with a couple of them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we'll talk about that later, obviously. But it's just a matter that, you know, he was trying to get, I think he was probably trying to get one of them to flip because he was worried Chelsea would flip from the sound of it.
No, that's true.
And on the Malolo side, you know, often, and Lord knows you saw this in your season, often you go in with a minority, but you find a crack and someone flips to your side.
Mm-hmm.
So even if there is a 5-4 advantage, you turn it around.
Right.
And so it wasn't until the Malolos saw, oh, this isn't happening after Brendan was voted out. Then they were all like, ah, crap. Now what do we do?
Right.
And, you know, Michael was the successful one, I guess, in making that leap.
Mm-hmm. I can't wait to hear some other exit interviews. Let me tell you, I'm very intrigued.
All right. Before we go on, since we just talked about being flexible, this is a good time to mention this week's sponsor, Simple Contacts, because they made getting new contact lenses quicker and they allow you to be more flexible with the way you get your contacts. Simple Contacts is the most convenient way to renew your contact lens prescription and reorder your brand of contacts from anywhere in minutes. It's vision care for the 21st century. You might be thinking, isn't buying contacts already simple? Sadly, no. It's actually pretty cumbersome. There's a law in the U.S. that requires anyone who wears contacts to have a new prescription written every year in order to be able to buy contact lenses, even if your vision hasn't changed for 15 years and you have perfectly healthy eyes.
I'm someone who can tell you that's exactly the case, because I've been wearing contacts for over 15 years. And the most frustrating part is that necessity that I have to renew my prescription every year in order to get more contacts. And not only is it expensive to pay for the exam, it's also time consuming. And I have to take time off from work because most eye doctors are 9 to 5 during the week. And plus, it also costs extra for a contact lens fitting to make sure the same contacts that I've been wearing for years still work. So I actually managed to avoid all of that with Simple Contacts. I literally took an eye exam in my basement using my phone, for real. I just needed to register on my phone, including information about my previous prescription, which took only a few minutes, and then I started the exam. The camera checked the redness in my eyes and then had me stand 10 feet away, and I had to read various letter arrangements with each eye separately and then both eyes together. This process was also quick, and I found out the next day that my exam had been reviewed and my prescription renewed. Now, my husband was amazed with all of this. He was home and saw just how easy it was and is now likely to use Simple Contacts too. And you as listeners can do the same. And you can save $30 on your lenses by going to simplecontacts.com/survivor or entering the code SURVIVOR at checkout. It's basically a one-stop shop. You register, order, and take the test all at one time. It's super convenient.
Yeah, there are a million things demanding your time, and contact lenses shouldn't be one of them. With Simple Contacts, you can renew your prescription and reorder your contacts from anywhere in minutes, just like you did, Jessica.
Mm-hmm.
No more doctor's office or waiting rooms. Think of how much time you save compared to making an appointment, getting to the eye doctor, taking time off, etc. This process is designed by doctors and licensed ophthalmologists to review every test carefully to make sure your eyes look healthy and that your vision hasn't changed. This isn't a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam, but it is the most convenient way to renew a prescription and reorder your contacts if your vision hasn't changed. Simple Contacts has all the brands and types of lenses you're familiar with, and Simple Contacts has been rated 5 stars over 3,000 times on the App Store. And it sounds to me like you would give it 5 stars as well.
I would, and I'm actually going to go on and do that.
So remember, everyone, go to simplecontacts.com/survivor or enter the code SURVIVOR at checkout so you can save $30 on your lenses at Simple Contacts. Again, that's simplecontacts.com/survivor or enter the code SURVIVOR at checkout. All right, now we get to the fourth rule, which tells players not to let their emotions control them. I don't think we really had to worry about Bradley getting too emotionally connected to other players to the point of him not wanting to vote them out. Do you?
I don't. And this is where I struggled with, I think it just leads into rule 5 too much, because there are certain things or certain components about his personality, but I think that's a little more rule 5 than rule 4.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say Bradley pretty closely followed this rule because, you know, one part even says you should treat the other players like pawns in a game.
Yeah.
And well, he certainly did that.
Yes.
As one example, Bradley said in his day after video that Stephanie was one of his favorite people there, but he, quote, ruthlessly voted her out.
Mm-hmm.
So he was not at all allowing friendship to get in the way.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, if you look at his list of people he wanted to face in the end, Kellen was not on that list.
Yes.
So clearly he was planning on doing away with her as well when the time was right.
Yeah, he was very clear in his exit interviews that outside of the game, so and so is fantastic and we get along and it's great. Like, he and Stephanie Johnson have a wonderful relationship outside of the game. But inside of the game, different story. And I do think that it's interesting that he's able to separate so well, because sometimes people have a real difficult time doing that, playing the game. And also the fact that he was willing to take out Kellen, which also speaks volumes, like you said, that he wasn't struggling with the realization that if I want to win, I have to take these people. I can't let a friendship get in the way.
Right. And, you know, like you said, this does somewhat lead to the fifth rule, because we have to remember that even as you are playing with the others as if they are pawns, which he did, you can't let them know that you see them that way, mm-hmm. because you have to pretend to be nice and play the social game. And I'm guessing that this is probably where many listeners expect a little bit of discussion.
Yeah. Can we start with a Bradley quote here?
Well, sure. Go ahead.
The hardest test out here is not being a dick. I think that speaks volumes of what we're dealing with on Rule 5.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I can start by mentioning what you already talked about, which was that he had said there was a method to his madness here, that he was trying to get on the Malolo's good side by blaming mm-hmm. their camp location for their loss. But he now says he quickly realized that wasn't coming off the right way. And okay, so that's Bradley's side of the story. And that may explain a few of the things he said, but by no means does it explain everything he said.
Right.
And a number of his fellow players have said he complained about a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for example, Brendan said, and he said this either on Twitter or in an interview, I can't remember which, that Bradley complained about a lot of things. You know, he was even complaining about the direction of the tide during one of the challenges.
That's fascinating. You know,
Stephanie said in an interview that Bradley complained again about everything, like even that the bamboo at Navidi was straighter than the bamboo at Malolo.
Yes.
And like you said, Stephanie and Brendan are friends of his now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Stephanie spent a good part of this past week with him, and he watched his boot episode with her and her kids.
Right.
So they're not just saying it because they don't like him. They actually do like him,
right.
And they still said it.
Yeah, and I feel like he went into this game knowing that about himself, because he said a lot of these things pregame, that it was going to be a difficult thing for him. And I'm pretty sure that Jeff Probst said he's either arrogant or was it cocky? I can't remember. He used or overconfident. I know, but he presents himself in a certain way that I don't know if he necessarily realizes by presenting himself in that fashion, he's coming across badly, even though he gets it at the same time. It's really weird. Like, he came into the game knowing it was going to be an issue for him, but then he tried to make it part of his strategy, but it clearly didn't work because it was too over the top.
Yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, you know, he had said that to Jeff Probst, and Jeff Probst told Josh Wigler after this episode that he didn't realize when Bradley said before the game that his biggest issue would be being nice to people, that he literally meant exactly
right.
that.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, Bradley had said, in my normal life, I have no patience. And, you know, you started us off with that other quote. So
yes.
You know, we saw a number of examples of this. We heard about others. You know, for example, just another example, Bradley noted in his interview with Rob that he had a problem in his delivery when talking to Dominic.
Mm-hmm.
He was trying to help Dominic early in the game by telling him he was drawing too much attention to himself. But the way it came off was him talking down to Dominic and telling him how to behave. And I think that leads into something you just said, the way he talks in his conversations, because in his day after video, Bradley acknowledged that he thought he was being normal in those conversations, and he, you know, would bring up points and counterpoints and the like.
Mm-hmm.
But he now realizes that, well, he's used to spending his time with lawyers and law students.
Right.
And the way they talk to each other can come across as an argument.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're the lawyer here, but I actually understand this completely because I work with a lot of attorneys. And I had a friend who started at work years ago with a really bad reputation for arguing a lot in a very blunt manner.
Mm-hmm.
So I pulled her aside and I pointed out to her that people were not happy with the way she talked to them. And she said almost exactly the same thing Bradley did. That's the way people talked in the firm where she had previously been.
Right. Well,
I mean, if you had an opinion, you were expected to defend it vigorously, and nobody took it personally because it was just lawyer talk. But then she came to work where I was, and nobody else around was like that. So they couldn't understand why she was such a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously this isn't the case for all lawyers, but it does seem to be true about a certain subset.
And it makes sense that he realizes about himself, but he doesn't realize how extreme it necessarily comes across. Because if you are around people every single day who are the same way you are, then clearly you're listening to them speak to you the way that you are speaking to them. And no one's being offended or being affected by it, because that's how everyone is communicating together. But this is one of those circumstances where you have to read the room and you have to read the people in the room. And Bradley needed to realize that he's not sitting on an island with a bunch of law school students or lawyers. He's sitting on an island with moms, dads, and people who work in SeaWorld and people, you know, I mean, like people that have, you know, have different professions and have different, they're in different places in their lives, and they're teachers. And that's what you need to really focus on. And if his plan, as he said, was to have conversations and make connections with these people, he should have spent more time trying to understand how better to communicate with somebody like that, you know, someone who is different than me, because he knows he can be brash and he knows that he can be in your face and he can be argumentative. You really got to rein that in a little bit. And clearly he didn't. And that's a lot of what we saw in his edit.
Yeah. And, you know, you just mentioned it, and I think you mentioned it earlier too, that, you know, he wanted to get to know people. And I do think that was the right idea, you know, for, especially for this rule, that, you know, talk to people, have personal conversations with them. But some of them didn't respond very well. And I think this is a big part of the reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it as another example, it sure seemed like Bradley's actions bothered the original Malolos more than, for example, the way they reacted to Kellen, despite the fact that both of them were leading the pogonging.
Yes, that's a good point. That is a good point.
You know, and I can't even take credit for it, because Stephen Fishback opined after episode 4 that it was probably Bradley's demeanor. And I just think he's right. Kellen was more pleasant to be around, while Bradley was complaining about dirt and the tide flowing the wrong way and being argumentative from their point of view.
And even some of the things we've mentioned this previously in the podcast, that Kellen almost came across very harsh in some of the comments that she made. And the one that I go back to is when she's at the well and she's telling Jenna and Stephanie Johnson that Purple's not going to turn on each other, and it sucks for you. And she was very kind of in your face, but it wasn't so offensive to Jenna and Stephanie, because Kellen does seem like an enjoyable individual, and she seems like she's sweet and someone that you could have a conversation with and not feel like they're judging you or they're talking down to you, or they're snapping at you to make you do something, or clapping their hands, whatever Bradley was doing to try to get Donathan to move. I mean, those are the kind of things that you do to a pet, you know, like if you want your dog to move, you snap or you clap your hands. You don't do that to a human being. So, but I feel like he was so accustomed to that in his own world that he forgot to turn it down and he needed to adjust it. I realize he said in his interviews that he wanted to be the villain and he wanted to be a character and he wanted to put on a great show and be entertaining. And you can do all of that without hurting yourself, I think, to the extent that he did.
Yeah. And it wasn't only the Malolos, because, you know, Chelsea noted in a web confessional that as they were getting close to the merge, she was thinking long term about, you know, who she wanted to work with in the game. And she realized she had better relationships with some of the newer people mm-hmm. than with the person she had been playing the game with the entire time.
Right.
You know, that's not a good thing for him.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple more items on this rule. First, while some people have lived through Bradley's comments and are still his friends, as we talked about, I'm not sure if Jenna is one of them, because she posted on Twitter, "To be clear, there is a huge difference between being confident and being so insecure in your own skin that you use bullying, complaining, and talking down to others to mask it."
Wow.
Ouch.
Yeah.
I'm guessing he's not getting a Christmas card from her.
Maybe not. And it doesn't sound like he and Jacob have a very close relationship either.
Did they even know each other?
Well, yeah,
well, I guess they did.
They went on the jury, you know, pre-merge trip together.
True. I had forgotten about
yeah,
that.
Yeah. And he he specifically kept, he mentioned specifically that Jacob was not included in their multiple text messages back and forth between all of the individuals who were on that trip, except Jacob. So I thought that was interesting as well.
Well, I think Jacob had to go back to work or something. I think I saw that he was not in those pictures because he had to go back to work. I'm not entirely sure, but he was at least not on part of that that trip to Australia, maybe.
Really?
I'm not sure. Yeah.
Oh, that's fascinating.
That's what I saw on Twitter, I believe.
Hmm. I had no idea.
Hopefully I'm not spreading fake news, but I believe that's what it was.
Hashtag fake news.
Yes. But to end this rule on a more amusing and positive note, Bradley's ex-girlfriend, Hillary, who had also been tweeting occasionally through the season, posted, come on, Navidi, I endured the antics of Bradley for years. You couldn't last a few more days? So
that's
so at least she seems to have a sense of humor about their relationship, and Bradley retweeted it, so I guess he does as well.
Yeah, that's funny. I like that. That's good.
So anyway, we move on to the sixth rule, which warns players against being too much of a threat. And, you know, this is the rule that really comes into play when we consider the situation of Dominic throwing the challenge. Mm-hmm. Because you don't do that, usually at least, unless you have a damn good reason.
Yeah. And,
you know, Dominic obviously thought he had a damn good reason, and it wasn't just that Bradley was whining.
Mm-hmm. So,
you know, Bradley was a threat in multiple ways, including at least one way that was in Dominic's head, but not in reality. The real way was that he was a threat because Dominic saw the tight bond of Bradley and Kellen and the grip the two of them had on the leadership of the alliance. So he wanted to get rid of that before the two of them could reconnect at the merge. Chelsea added in her web confessional that Bradley is a powerful and dangerous player. And also, Rob mentioned on the podcast earlier this week that Dominic wants to play like Boston Rob, and that means keeping controllable people, which definitely does not describe Brad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think that this is a strange circumstance that we find ourselves in, because obviously the edit makes it look like he wasn't necessarily a threat. He was more of an annoyance. But like you said, Dominic is not going to risk throwing a challenge unless he does have a really not only good reason for it, but he needs to know that he's got other people in his corner, that he's got Donathan and he's got Libby on his side, because you can't go into a challenge and throw it not knowing that you've got other people who are going to be voting with you the way that you want to when you're making a move like this. And to me, that speaks volumes that everyone was kind of on the same page with what needed to happen and the reasons for it. Because I don't think if you went to someone on your tribe and said, listen, I want to throw a challenge because that guy's being a dick, I don't think that's going to be sufficient. I don't think the other players are going to say, yeah, let's do that so we can get rid of him because he's annoying. I
don't know. I think Donathan might have. And it's not clear if Libby knew, because they might have been keeping Libby as a backup choice.
That's true.
But I think Donathan would have been perfectly happy to get rid of him just for being a dick.
Well, and that's a good point, because that's something that Bradley did mention in one of his exit interviews, that that was probably the spin that Dominic put on it to Donathan, because Donathan, you know, was raging inside about getting barked orders at and being clapped at when it came to making the stakes. So perhaps that would work for Donathan, but I still feel like if you are going to make that pitch, it better be good. And you really better have a good read on the people you're making the pitch to get them to say, okay, yeah, we're willing to go to tribal council and we're willing to do this. You've got to have good reasons for it. And I feel like there had to have been more. And people probably did recognize the fact that he's clearly a smart guy and he's well-spoken, even though he says things that might be a little brash. But he's educated and he's smart and he could probably do well speaking his case or arguing in his favor at a final three. He's clearly good at puzzles. So that would be another issue, too, going into emerge and individual immunity challenges. Most of the time they end in a puzzle. So that's something else to look at. And yeah, Dominic has a game that he wants to play, and Bradley doesn't fit into that game that he wants to play.
No, it does not.
It does not. So for Dominic, Bradley's a huge threat. Huge.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting is, you know, you talked about, well, we talked about Dominic convincing Donathan, but it turns out, you know, Donathan was right there on that same page, and he actually worried about Dominic, because this is where the unreal threat came in. We heard in interviews that Dominic believed Bradley was targeting parents, which, of course, is obviously a threat to Dominic.
Mm-hmm.
Before we even heard that in interviews, Donathan tweeted in reply to me saying he had lied to Dominic to get Dominic believing exactly that about Bradley. And of course, it was supported by the fact that Bradley voted out Brendan and Stephanie, though not for those reasons. So, yeah, Donathan was 110% on board getting rid of Bradley.
But I think that there's more to it than just Bradley's being a jerk and he's annoying. I think for Donathan, there's probably more at play, too, as far as his game moving forward and how he sees his game turning out. And it probably didn't work out well to keep Bradley in Donathan's game either. And that's what So there has to be more at play. We can't just say, oh, yeah, he got sent home because he was annoying everybody. That was one level. There's always multiple levels. And if you are annoying and there's other reasons, like you're a threat once we get to the merge and the idea of putting him and Kellen back together. Oh, my goodness. They could have wreaked havoc at the merge if the two of them had gotten back together. So I think a lot of people probably saw that building. And it's just unfortunate that we didn't get to really see it with them. We have to kind of guess what they were seeing.
Yeah, I mean, there is no way that Donathan would ever believe that he was part of Bradley's plans for the future.
Right.
And so, I mean, first of all, he and Libby were in the minority.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, he wanted to flip things around. I mean, anyone but him at that point.
Yep.
But beyond that, yeah, there's no way he was ever going to be in an alliance mm-hmm. with Bradley.
Right.
So, of course, get rid of him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So there's always something more. And I do think that as far as his being a threat, it became a threat to individual people's games and how he was going to affect their individual game at the merge.
Right. Right. Absolutely. All right. Rule 7 talks about getting and playing idols and advantages. And while Bradley himself didn't get either, it does seem to have been his idea to send close ally Kellen to Ghost Island in this
episode.
Thank you.
Thank you for...
You're welcome.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. We've talked about this idea of either volunteering to go to Ghost Island or sending someone who's already been there. That makes the most sense, especially if it's someone who you're aligned with, if they're going to come back with an advantage. Yeah, that's great. Like, I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah. And he had the excuse that Chelsea apparently bought immediately of, well, we want to keep it to someone who's been there before.
Yeah.
You know, now it's possible that Chelsea thought it was a good idea because she's in an alliance with Kellen as well.
And Desiree did talk about that in one of her web confessionals as well, that she's hoping that the reason why they ended up sending Kellen, because she was very sad that Kellen was there because she knew how hard it was mm-hmm. on Kellen. But she was hoping that the reason why they picked her was because she's in our alliance and we want her to have an advantage for us. It was very team oriented and it wasn't about Kellen having an advantage. It was the alliance having an advantage.
Yeah. And on top of it, I mean, they got to feed Kellen. You know, she got all the rice she could eat.
I know. I would love. I'd be like, send me, please. To eat. And you know what else I find amazing about Ghost Island? You don't have to make fire because there's fire everywhere. So you're
right. Unless you're Josh Wiggler.
That's true.
The only one that had to make fire.
That's true. Sorry, Josh. Everyone else gets fire. Yeah, so you're pretty much set. As much as, you know, you can eat as much rice as you want, and you don't have to worry about making a fire. You have a whole huge bamboo bed to yourself. I think it would be sweet.
Yeah.
I like it.
So, you know, also, sort of relevant to this rule, but not really relevant at all to Bradley, I do want to say that I am really enjoying how a lot of Survivor Twitter changed literally overnight from people saying, it's so boring to have a pagonging without any idols, to a lot of the same people saying, holy crap, two idols and an advantage all at once. That's too much. I've just been laughing at that one a lot.
Yes. Yes, that has been very, the Twitter world with Survivor is quite entertaining.
Yes, they turn on a dime.
Yes, that's true.
All right. And we will turn on to Appendix A, which the key to this is to keep your end goal in mind when you're voting. And it seems especially pertinent here because in this case, we're mostly talking about Dominic and Chelsea, as we have been for the past hour or so.
Mm-hmm.
Since, of course, it was in the best interest of Donathan and Libby, as we've discussed, to vote anyone but them, and especially to turn on Bradley. Mm-hmm. But even beyond that, I would say we're mostly talking about Dominic, as he appears to be the driving force. And in the words of Bradley in his interviews, the move was all Dominic.
Yeah, and there was an interesting thing that Chelsea mentioned in one of her web confessionals, too, that if Bradley gets voted out, then the alliance is no longer Bradley and Kellen, and then Chelsea is there. Basically, Kellen becomes Chelsea's alliance. So she was she was looking at the configuration in that regard, too. So there was a lot of long term thinking and end game ideas going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, but originally when I was watching, and I mentioned this earlier, none of this made sense to me, especially for Dominic. But now that, you know, we've had some time to reflect on it, go over all the additional information, mm-hmm. I'm moving to the side that I understand it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, we discussed, Dominic saw that Bradley and Kellen had a tight bond and a grip on the leadership of the alliance. So he had to get rid of that before the merge.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the part where it could get tricky, and I think this is where a lot of us got tripped up in the early goings. If you look at a lot of the blogs, the podcasts that came out right away, everybody was concentrating a lot on the fact that, well, Bradley was 100% behind Dominic in the Chris versus Dom battle.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh my God, why would he do this? Well, does Dominic care is the real question, because he has an immunity idol and he has the legacy advantage, mm-hmm. which coincidentally can be used at the merge tribal council if he wants to.
Right.
So from that standpoint, it may well make sense for Dominic to take this action now. He doesn't have to worry about the upcoming battle with Chris, and he gets rid of, he splits up the power couple.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think it does make sense, the move,
yeah,
for Dominic.
It does. It makes a lot of sense for Dominic in that long-term game thinking. And I think as far as the relationship that Kellen and Bradley had was so strong, and you're also dealing with a Chris Angela potential twosome as well, the less twosomes you have going into a merge, the better. And Libby was someone who, I understand she turned her back on Dominic once, but she did explain the reason why she did what she did as far as what was important to her, you know, the relationships versus the alliance that she had. So I think in Dominic's world, even though he described Libby as, what was it, an angel or a devil in an angel's body or something like that, I still think that Libby is less of a concern for him personally at the merge than someone like Bradley.
Yeah, I agree. Now, as for Chelsea, even though, like I said, I think that Dominic was pushing it and Chelsea was, you know, probably right there with him going, yeah, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
But Dominic seems to be a pusher of actions. You know, he definitely is not one to sit still.
Yeah.
But, you know, you already mentioned how this would get her closer with Kellen. And the other thing was that she knew looking ahead that Bradley would quickly dispose of her.
Mm-hmm.
And Bradley did indeed confirm that in interviews.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, it made sense for her to go along with this too.
Now, the issue she's going to run into, though, I think, when they merge and Kellen sees Bradley is gone and finds out that Chelsea was one of the ones that, well, they all voted him out, I don't know if that relationship is going to mend itself in the manner that Chelsea thinks it's going to.
It's funny you should mention that, but we'll wait for predictions to get to that point.
Okay.
They did at least Chelsea, I think she said in one of her web confessionals that they, you know, they would not be as worried about it because they could say that Bradley was tossing her name around or Dominic's name around and they had to do it as a defensive maneuver. Now, whether anyone believes that or not, that's another story.
Yeah, Kellen's going to be pissed.
Yeah. So, all right. So we're coming to the end here for Bradley. Before I sum up my conclusions, do you have any final thoughts about him?
I already mentioned this, but Bradley really did. I think he evolved as the game progressed. And it was an interesting way to watch his game evolve, because I do think that he got a little bit of, I don't even want to call it a bad edit, but he got an edit, and I know he loves it. He enjoys his edit. He had fun watching himself. But I feel like his edit took away from some of the rest of the story that we all wanted to see. I think that there was this idea or this focus on Bradley being the villain and Bradley being the jerk. And because of that, we lost some of the strategizing that went into the various moves and things that were happening, especially when he was getting voted out. So I think that some of his possibilities in this game were lost because we were so focused on the character that he had become, which I know he loved. Overall, though, I think Bradley was interesting to watch. And I do think that he could have done much more in this game if he had taken parts of himself and tucked him in a corner and not been so aggressive and brash and whiny, as many people did say. But, you know, overall, it was the game choice that he made. He knew that about himself. He went into the game knowing that about himself, and he put it on for full display. And unfortunately, it didn't work out for him so well. And he was also coming into this game with a lot of other issues for people like Dominic that we've discussed already. So I think that it was sad to see him go, but I understand why he did.
All right. Well, you know, my wife does not usually watch Survivor with me because I'm watching the show, taking notes, live tweeting, occasionally rewinding, and she just can't handle all of
that. Yes.
But this week she did watch with me. And during this episode, she turned to me and said, "Bradley's an ass. How'd he make it this far?" So basically, she was speaking for many viewers of the show. Was Bradley kind of a jerk on Survivor? Yeah, he was. The show made it seem like there was only one reason Bradley was voted out, because he was, in the words of my wife, an ass. But we all know things are rarely that simple on Survivor, and we certainly have seen that here. Bradley wasn't voted out because he complained and talked down to people. Bradley had been in control, or at least co-control, of his alliance for most of the game. He was clearly in a duo with Kellen, and together they kept the Navidi 5 solid while also trying to make other bonds. If the two of them were allowed to get back together, Dominic would have had little chance of controlling the game in the way he wanted to. So he decided to strike first, egged on by Donathan planting the idea of Bradley being anti-parent. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying Bradley's behavior played no role at all. Being unlikable can make it easier to vote someone out. It may have been one of the reasons Chelsea didn't get along with him from the get-go. It may have made it that much easier for Donathan to plant the seed with Dominic. And it certainly may have been simpler for Dominic to get rid of an ally who he believed was talking down to him. Bradley played pretty well up to this point, putting himself in the majority early and staying there throughout the first swap. He was entertaining to watch, at least in my opinion, but probably not quite as entertaining for some to be around 24/7. Still, he tried to play the social game, and he succeeded in making some good friends. But he voted out those friends for strategic reasons, as he should have. Then he got swapped, apparently into the majority again, but this time he came up against someone who was both thinking far ahead and had the ability to make his strategy happen. In the end, it wasn't Bradley's attitude or even his lawyer talk that caused him to get voted out. It was the fact that he was in an obvious duo controlling too many other players. That made him too big a threat to the rest of Dominic's game. And that is why Bradley lost.
Excellent.
All right. So I already hinted a little bit for the prediction here, but let's get to it because it's merge time.
Oh, my word.
And as usual, this season, we don't have a lot to go on.
No, we don't.
I mean, unless we really believe the whole episode will be about the Chris versus Dominic war.
Right.
you know, RHAP and former Reality News Online blogger Sarah Channon pointed out on Twitter that if Chris or Dominic does indeed succeed in taking the other one out, it will be the first time a man has been the merge boot since Ko-Rong.
Ooh, that's interesting. Yeah,
so she thinks there's a decent chance both end up safe and the vote turns against a woman. And I think she's likely right because, well, quite honestly, she usually is about these things. And I'm really, really hoping that Kellen doesn't follow her partner in crime out the door.
That was what I was thinking.
Oh, you better not. Don't even put that in the universe. Well, I guess I was the one who put that in the universe. So, you know, Bradley says that before he was voted out, he believed the merge would bring together himself, Kellen, Desiree, Michael, Sebastian, and Jenna, plus maybe Chelsea, at least for a short time. I figure one of two things may happen. Dominic may place himself in that alliance in place of Bradley, or else, like you mentioned earlier, that alliance may turn on Dominic and Chelsea. If the latter happens and Chelsea is seen as Dominic's lieutenant, well, we know what often happens to the lieutenants.
Oh, yes, that's true.
Yes. Now, the only other possibility I see is that they all stick together and they try to restart the original Malolo Pagonging, but I just don't think that'll happen. So, up till this point, I've thought Chelsea would go out in some way that would justify the lack of screen time she's been given, like maybe in a double eviction episode. But another good way to do it would be at the merge when there are a lot of stories to tell in just 43 minutes. So, with that in mind, as well as the possibility that she will take the fall for Bradley getting the boot, I'm going to predict Chelsea has a momentary spike in screen time and then is immediately silenced.
That's fascinating. I like that. Well, because here's the thing. I went through when I was trying to figure out who's going to be like working with who and who's going to actually care about working with other people. I think the big problem we're going to run into is I do think Kellen is going to almost have blinders on when she sees that Bradley is gone. I don't know if you remember the look that Kellen gave when she saw Morgan was voted out, but if looks could kill, she was very unhappy when she saw that Morgan was gone.
Yeah, Kellen has a very expressive face.
She really does.
I took a screen grab of when she found out that the original tribe swap was happening, and she was not happy about that.
Yeah. So I do think that Kellen is going to kind of become a force. And I think that Kellen is going to take a game that she's been playing really well and respond emotionally to what happens when she sees that Bradley is gone. And I do think that you're probably right. She probably will target Chelsea because if she finds out that she was kind of the driving force, and I think Dominic is probably going to do a really good job of selling it, that it was more Chelsea than it was him. And plus Dominic is safe. But I feel like there's going to be some issues for Kellen. I really do. Like, I feel like she's going to almost have blinders on, and then somehow she will end up becoming the focus of this vote because she's going to have those blinders on. I don't know. I think it might be Kellen.
Oh, I hope not. I hope not.
I don't know where she's going to fall in this new group. I really don't, because I realize that she's been Kellen, Chelsea, and Desiree and Michael should probably be together. But Chelsea, I think, is going to come out of that equation, obviously, because of what happened with Bradley. So then you've got Kellen and Desiree and Michael. But then you have this other little group of Jenna and Sebastian, Chris and Angela, and Donathan's probably going to fit in there, too. And then you've got Dominic and Laurel and Wendell who are together. And I don't know where Libby is going to fall. So it's kind of strange to see where everyone is. What relationships are going to hold tight and what ones are going to falter? And I think that this is going to kind of cause a domino effect for Naviti, and that
a domino effect or a Dominic effect?
A Dominic effect. That's perfect. I really do think that it's going to take a crack that was little and it's going to blow it apart. And there was a very interesting component to one of the interviews that Bradley gave, that if a Malolo makes it to the final three, that they're going to have a really great argument that they survived, you know, the Navidi Strong, that they made it to the end. And I do think that it's, you see this often where a group goes into the merge with a large amount of numbers and it falls apart because something implodes. And I think that this is going to lead to that.
All right. Well, I'm still going to hope that my prediction is correct. So,
well, I won't tell you that the Magic 8 Ball told me I was right, but it did.
Well, that's okay, because it's been wrong just as often. I know, it really has. So.
Well, now, let's review.
And me, for that matter.
I was just going to say, I at least got one prediction correct. I did predict Stephanie Johnson, and yeah, I was correct there. Right. So I think I'm leading right now as far as predictions.
Yeah, Jessica, you're right.
Just had to throw that out there.
Yeah, yeah. So. All right. So it is time to wrap up. And I think we just stumbled on our hashtag, because even though you were talking about the future, I really think this describes what happened in this episode. And that would be hashtag Dominic effect.
I like it. That's good.
So just stumbled onto that at the end there. And of course, the hashtag for this podcast overall, whenever you want to talk to us, is hashtag YXLost. Remember, everyone, that if you use contact lenses, you should go to simplecontacts.com/survivor or enter the code survivor at checkout so you can save $30 on your lenses at Simple Contacts. Then after you've done that, make sure you subscribe to all of the RHAP Survivor podcasts by going to robhasapodcast.com/survivor. We are also on the Reality TV Rehapups feed. In both places, you can find great RHAP content like the Know-It-Alls, the Wiggle Room, the RHAP B&B, and much more. When you are using those hashtags that we mentioned, you should do that on Twitter. And you should follow Jessica there, at JessicaLewis89, and I am at David Bloomberg.
Yes, follow us.
Make sure you, right, follow both of us, because then you'll see the whole conversation.
Exactly.
And sometimes you will see Twitter press conferences. So. You never know what you're going to find.
They're quite fun.
Yes. As we wrap up, thanks to Scott St. Pierre, who does all of the editing on the Why Blank Lots podcasts. Last week, he had to go to extraordinary measures because we had a microphone problem. But you guys didn't even know that because of how good he is.
Exactly.
So, also, thanks as always to Will from America for the theme song. And thanks to you, Jessica, for this great episode.
Well, thank you, David Bloomberg. It has been super fun, as always. And I can't wait to see what's going to happen this week. It's going to be very exciting to watch the merge. And we will be chatting about it after it happens. So everybody needs to listen.
That's right. We will talk to everyone again in 1 week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
A lost survivor and you're feeling down. David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. Played yourself and got voted out. This is why blank lost. And this is why blank lost.